Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and that was Green Fire, In the Fire. And tonight we're going to be talking to someone who's been in the fire and out. It's an incredible story. Probably one of the most amazing adventures in consciousness I've ever heard. And I've been doing this program for a long time and talking to a lot of people. And tonight we'll be talking to Mellon Thomas Benedict, who had, I wouldn't say a near-death experience, but a death experience, and was dead for an hour and a half and has come back from the other side to really give a very important message to the world. And he'll also be speaking in Connecticut in just a few weeks, August 26th, 27th, 28th. And you can find out about that through soul-wisdom.org. Welcome, Mellon. Thanks for being here today.
Well, hi, Alan. It's great to be on the airwaves with you.
I read your story. You're also featured in that book by Deepak Chopra, Life After Death. So the thing that's so interesting about your adventure, would they say, is that when you died, you were conscious, it seemed like, and you were able to decide not to, or you questioned the light, or there was a conscious decision to do something that probably most people never do after they die, right? Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, yes. Before I had my near-death experience, I wasn't into spirituality at all. In fact, I wasn't even an atheist. At least they show some interest in the subject. I also had never heard the word near-death and never heard the word hospice till I ended up in one. So I was pretty clueless. But to my amazement, you know, I survived my physical death and was given a second chance to live yet another life. But I didn't realize that my experience was unusual because I really didn't know anything till several years later when a lady called PMH Atwater kind of discovered me and introduced me to some of the major near-death researchers. And when I told them my story, they said that it was unusual in that aspect, in that while I was having the experience, I had this thought that this seems interactive. This is an interactive experience, and indeed it is. Your death and your spiritual adventure is just as interactive as your life here right now. And when I realized that, I began a conversation with what we now call the light, which was quite a long conversation because the very first thing I thought when I was before the light was I didn't know what else to say, totally unprepared, and my first thought was, "Are you God?" I mean, I think that's what probably any atheist would say too when you're facing this magnificence. And to my astonishment, I can tell you this: that that light which is the source of us all, that we're always connected to, that we can never be separated from, that source knows you intimately, maybe even better than you know yourself. And when the light speaks to you, it speaks in a way that transcends your dogma, your beliefs. It speaks to you in whatever frame that you're in. And because I had no agenda, and I certainly didn't believe I was going to heaven or anything like that, that wasn't even in my concepts. So when the light spoke to me, and when the light speaks to you, you get it. It speaks to you so that you really understand. I've never had a conversation like that in my life till that
Wait,
time.
Wait, so what did the light say when you asked, "Are you God?" The light said to you what?
Well, this is what happened. I was stunned, and I thought, "I'm in a lot of trouble. Are you God?" And the light said, "Who and what is not God?" And I understood that instantly to mean that if I ever wanted to describe or try to explain what God is to anyone, I would have to name every single thing, atom, everything in the universe, and that would take forever. So for me, that was the perfect answer. Who and what is not God? It's all what we call God.
Yeah, but that light was something, I don't know, special. That was another what was that light then?
Well, I can tell you, I've had many, many years to assimilate my experience. Plus, the other thing I didn't realize until I met PMH Atwater and Dr. Ken Ring and others who were researching me, I didn't realize that other near-deathers weren't going to the light every day at will. I was and still am. I go to the light every day. I go at will. I've gone to the light and retrieved information under double-blind studies scientifically. And I'd never met any other near-deathers, and I didn't know this is what it was and that I was probably unique in that form. So I have the a tremendous amount of experience of not just having one near-death experience. I've been able all of my life since then to go back to the light, ask for clarification, ask new questions, and I have assimilated this over, over 25-year span now. So I can explain it to you on several layers at the same time now that I did not understand when it first happened, because when my experience first happened, I was like a wonder child. It was like I was a child who had seen the movie and could tell you all about the movie. That didn't mean I understood all the nuances. I can tell you now exactly what that light is. And that light is basically what you would call the oversoul of this planet. It is the nexus of the sum total of all experience in this system from the beginning of time to the present moment. If you're a techie, you might describe it as the mother frame, the big supercomputer that processes and assimilates all information. And I can tell you this too, that what people now call the life review that many near-deathers get, that life review has a multifold purpose. Number one, that life review is the only judgment and the most serious judgment you will ever go through. It's self-judgment when your life is reviewed for you. And your life can have a complete review. It can have a shallow review. It just depends on what you want and can receive at the time. There were many things I didn't look at in my life review, and there were other things I was fascinated by. But having that life review is a reassessment of your life, and you get to see it from like a holographic point of view. You not only get to see what you've done and how that's affected people, but you can see what's been done to you, what's happened to you in your life and your world that has affected you. And up until the day I died, I really didn't understand why my life was the way it was, why the world was the way it was. And in that experience, suddenly, all the pieces fell in place. And you know, I didn't live a bad life. I didn't live a great life. I lived a kind of an average dysfunctional life. But I was amazed to see things that I'd never seen before. I can explain some of those in a minute, but I want to finish the thought here. So as you're having that life review, you're also downloading every bit of experience that you have experienced in that lifetime into that light, into that supercomputer, you can call it. And that is the sum total, and some people call it the Book of Life, the Akashic Records. There are many, many names and many different cultures for it. So as you're having a life review, you're downloading your experience into this source that you come from that's shared by everyone, so that every body, no matter how great or how small or how petty or how wonderful a life you've lived, all of that experience is important, of universal importance, in fact. So all of that experience is going into this nexus, and then when you pass through the light, you have shared that experience with all the rest of us so that we can all grow in ways that are unimaginable at this time.
Wow. So you looked at your life review, and did you realize why that illness was with you that caused you to die and what the purpose of that was?
Yes, and it was a complete surprise to me because, you know, it's like they say, it's the little things that kill you. You know, it's rare. You know, most of us on the planet will not be hit by a bus. Most of us will not be in an airplane crash. Mm-hmm. I can tell you this, though. It was, to my amazement, you know, I was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, mm-hmm. and given basically 6 to 8 months to live. It was inoperable, incurable at the time. And literally I just fell through the cracks. I had no spiritual foundation to back me up or anything like that. But what I saw in my life review was something that I had forgotten that was the seed of my disease and caused my death, and that was this. I was someone who didn't believe in religion, didn't believe there was a God and all that, and that was fine, but I did believe all the experts, the ecologists, I believed the President of the United States, I believed all this stuff that we were hearing in my childhood, and I was raised in the Cold War, by the way, mm-hmm. which is a very different atmosphere than we live in today. And in those days, you know, we were always minutes from nuclear destruction. I mean, we had the power, and the experts were telling us to, you know, to blow up the world 500 times over. And the best minds of our time, our best leaders of the time, the only solution they came up with at the time, and if you're a young listener, you should check this out. The older listeners, the baby boomers, might remember this. Our response to this threat was called mutual assured destruction, MAD. That was the big plan. And, mm-hmm. and that, imagine that, the best minds of our time, their biggest plan they came up with, if all this starts, we're just going to kill everybody, mutual mm-hmm. assured destruction. And that was very depressing if you lived in those times. Mm-hmm. And also, in those times, everyone had, if you had anything together at all, you had bomb shelters in your backyards, right. or you had bomb shelters you could go to in other people's yards. I mean, it was quite an interesting time. Well, for me, I was very sad because, again, I had no spiritual background. I really thought that the world was going to end in my lifetime, and it was not a religious spiritual notion. It was a what I thought was based on fact, listening to the ecologists, listening to the experts at the time, who back then, in my childhood in the 60s, were saying that no matter what humanity did, it was already over, we could never correct the problems, we would overgraze the planet, overpopulate it, and blow it up in my lifetime. And I began to believe that. Now, what got me, what was the seed of my disease, was something very simple that I had forgotten about, but I was reminded in my life review, and that was, you've heard the old saying, it was a straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, in my case, it was a photograph, one photograph that killed me. It killed me that moment I saw it.
And it really killed you, though, didn't it?
Pardon me?
I'm saying it really did kill you.
It really yes. did, and the photograph was this, and it was put out by a well-meaning ecologist group, and it's still floating around out there and being used, but it was it stunned me. And that photograph was a comparison. It was a aerial photograph of the city of Los Angeles, and right next to it was a micro photograph of a cancer cell, and they looked exactly the same to me. And that's what this group was trying to say. In that moment, when I saw that photograph, in that moment, I had the thought deep in my heart, deep in my heart, that nature had gone wrong and created a malignant cancer on planet Earth called humanity. Mm-hmm. And I, in the deepest part of my heart, was convinced that everything had gone wrong, that humans were a malignant cancer on planet Earth and wanting to kill ourselves and everything else. And I warn people, be careful of your worldview, because that is what gets you, is your worldview, whatever you think the world is. And I believe the world was going to end in my lifetime, and I developed terminal brain cancer. And I
because
didn't know
of that,
that
image, that is
a,
that's been, that's just amazing that one image created a worldview that your whole being identified with. So then, when your life review happened, how were you able to change that belief and see it all differently now?
Well, it didn't change in the life review, that's for sure, because my life review made me very, very sad. There were issues in my family and issues in my life that I'd never understood until that review, and one of which is I believed, as many people do, but I believed my parents never loved me. And I had my biological father, who's passed on many years ago, was a full-blown alcoholic, and there were many times I thought he was trying to kill my mother and kill us. And I I came from a family that didn't have love skills, and so they could not teach me about love. And mm-hmm. I had no skills in love. So I believe that I couldn't see love. I didn't see love in the world. I believe that no one really could love anybody. I believe that I had never been loved. And in my life review, it made me so sad to see how many people had tried to love me, and I didn't get it. I didn't see it. And I didn't have the equipment to receive love. That made me very, very sad that I had wasted all of that love that I had never seen and never been able to receive.
So coming back, I mean, of course, we're skipping around a little bit. Then coming back, having realized that, how are you living your life differently now with love?
Well, it's been a journey. Let me tell you, the near-death experience is can be very insightful. It can also make many people that have had them dysfunctional. The other side is not all it's cracked up to be in myth and legend, for sure. And
what do you mean the other side? I mean, you're saying the other side, death, is not cracked up to everything it's.
Yeah, the myth and legends about it. It's not a lot like that. It's actually very different than
what is
any
it
of the
like?
Myths. Well, let's stick with a thought first.
Okay.
You know, basically, what I learned was that the world, and it sounds like these cliches, but they're all true. That the world is what you make of it, and also the world. This is interesting. I'd had this great experience with the light. All of my questions at that time on the other side had been answered. And I even got an education because I even asked, is there an afterlife? Is there anything, if there's anything else? And I got a tremendous education in subjects that I knew nothing about, like reincarnation. I learned on the other side that reincarnation is more real than people even imagine. And forgive me for saying this, that the standard spiritual explanation of reincarnation is rather flimsy. But it's more real than people imagine. It's part of quantum physics. It's more real than you can imagine. And
I'm not sure what you mean when you say it's more real than.
It's not a legend. It's not a spiritual dogma. We do reincarnate on a number of levels where there is actual physical reincarnation going on all the time in the system. And I was shown the quantum physics of this and even the quantum mechanics of how this is possible and how it is as natural as anything else. It's so natural. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so imagine this. I'd learned all this, and I really thought, and I wasn't told I'd be given a second chance. None of that happened in my, that wasn't a part of my conversation. I was ready to move on at a certain point. I had seen what I wanted to see. I'd asked all the questions I wanted to ask. And then I began what I believed was going to be my next incarnation because I understood how this works now. And I passed through the light, and I really thought I was going to be reborn into a fresh new life, knowing everything I know now and be wise and all that. And what happened was I was reincarnated right back into the same life I'd had the same second I'd let off with the same disease. And weeks and weeks after that, realizing that I'd had this great experience and yet I was returned to exactly the same moment I left off was actually very depressing. And I thought, what a rip. Why didn't I get a new life?
Why do you think you didn't die?
Well, because there's no skipping of grades. No matter if you die and come back or you die and don't come back, there are no skipping of grades. And so I finally had to realize this and start living my life again, the very life I thought I was leaving, the very life that I didn't like, the very life that I didn't love. And so the lesson for me, which the light told me many times, was the secret is to love your life. And that became my journey, was to love my life, which I do.
That's a, wait, let me just digest that point, because I think that's such a big, big thing for everyone to really absorb, is to, because we've incarnated here into the form, into this physical form, and part, the major part of that is to love that, this incarnation, to love existence, to love our bodies, our minds, our being. That's what you're saying.
Yes. And for some, and for me and for others, it may seem like the most impossible thing to do. In fact, the first time the light said, you must love your life to be well, to be whole, I thought, are you crazy? That's impossible. Love my life? Are you serious? And I think many people may feel that way, too.
So you took the journey, though, of loving your life. I mean, so you, I mean, you had this great experience, but what was it that made you or shifted you to love your life? I mean, you still had the same life, but how did you come to the psychology of getting there?
Well, it was a moment in when I was with the light. The crucial moment in this is when I asked that question. I asked the light. I said, well, you know, if all this is true, then why is humanity so dark, evil, and doomed? Because that's what I believed humanity was.
Right.
I believed humanity was darkness and evil. And at that moment, when I asked that question of the light, it turned into, I guess, what you could call a mandala.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that don't know what a mandala is, it's almost like one of those giant round cathedral stained glass windows with all the different pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think most of the people listening to the program probably know what mandala is.
Well, the light actually turned into a mandala that looked to me still hard to describe, maybe never be able to give an image of it, but the light turned into a mandala of living human souls. And I was, it felt like I was breathed right into the center of this. And it seemed as if I could look into every human soul, including my own. And I was stunned to see no evil and no darkness in any human soul. And it was in that moment, and that the light said, oh, beautiful human. And in that moment, I got it. In that moment, I understood that despite the world of survival, despite the things that happened to us, despite everything, there is a part of us, our essence, that's untainable, uncorruptible. There's nothing we can do to mess it up. You can never be separated from it because it is your core essence. And in that moment when the light said, oh, beautiful human, I fell in love with my life and with humanity.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And, that was the healing. That was the shift. It sounds, I mean, that's a beautiful transformation. But I believe that too. I believe that everyone is pure and beautiful and a loving presence. I was having that discussion with someone this weekend, and they said, but why is there so much suffering and why is there so much apparent evil? I mean, people who do harm other people, corporations that want to, destroy the earth. I mean, why does that exist?
You know, I'm glad you asked that, because that is the main presentation I'll be doing at this conference in Norwalk, in Connecticut, at the end of the month, Soul Wisdom.
Nice.
I am going to give a multimedia presentation where I explain this, and it will reduce your fear, it will reduce your anger in the world to see that there is something much bigger than all of this going on right here, right now, inside you, outside of you, and that our media our fears of, because from day one in our evolution, we have been living in a world of survival. All of nature is in the world of survival. And when you get a break from the survival world, you see this beautiful essence just evolve like this beautiful flower right out of everything. And so it's so important to understand, and I'll be doing a multimedia presentation to help people get this into their hearts and minds, and that is, we have come to a point in history that has never happened before, totally unique, magical. It's the most amazing point any civilization on any planet that evolved through the natural world and had to evolve through survival levels will ever achieve, and we're about to achieve that. In fact, the incredible thing to try to understand is that technically, scientifically, and everything else, we're there already. In fact, as I was shown by the light, that as of 1975, we have technically reached a point in our history where technically we can feed, clothe, comfort, educate every human on Earth and not destroy the planet. We can take care of everything. Before this time, it was not technically possible. And that's why we're in the periods now to see the end of wars. I mean, even to the most ignorant person, wars make no sense at all now whatsoever. They're too expensive. They make no sense at all anymore. Had I been the president of the United States when 9/11 happened, I would have immediately asked why and had the biggest peace conference this world had ever seen.
Right.
So to understand that we've reached this technical point is astounding, because it makes it not only mentally and spiritually possible, it makes it physically possible now to bring heaven to earth.
But it's not, I mean, it probably will happen, and I'm sure, and I know it will at some point, but why is it not happening soon enough? Why is there still the suffering? Why are corporations destroying the earth with, you know, all the things they're doing?
Well, I think there's sort of a misconception that that I address, you know, in my presentation about this, because this is the most important thing I learned on the other side. The most important thing I learned is that we have, I really believed the experts of my time that, mutual assured destruction, MAD, was the best idea.
Right.
I really believed that the experts were right. And the experts, if you look at history, the experts have always been more wrong than they've ever been right. We still live in a survival world, so we're very concerned with survival issues on every level, from money to crime to you name it. And now that we have satellites and cable systems TiVos all over the planet, we seem to be steeped and more aware of this than ever before in history. It's like you've got to understand that most of the companies in the world and most of the people in the world wouldn't hurt you if it was legal to hurt you and if it was karma-free. You've got to start understanding that. When anything gets too big, it becomes cancerous. And the light told me that, you know, in the physical universe, there will always be pain. There will always be broken hearts and broken bones. But what we're about to achieve is the end of suffering. And so don't think every company in the world is bad. Don't, like I did, it's not true at all.
Well, I don't really think that. I just was having a discussion with someone who was saying, so you're saying mostly people want to do good. They just don't have a map to creating a paradise on earth.
Well, we're still living in a time period where we've had the biggest troublemakers are still with us, the kings, priests, and thieves. They've always been the biggest trouble from caveman days to the present. And the way to answer this, and it is the next step of human evolution, is self-initiation. And that's something no one can stop you from. It's something that's not only possible, it's inevitable, that you will become self-realized within the next couple of incarnations, for sure.
But maybe within this incarnation. But what does that mean to you, self-realized, the awakening of living in the present?
Well, it isn't to me. To me, it's not a spiritual thing. Self-realization and self-initiation means that, and the light has told me this many times, is that you already know there's a deep, eternal part of yourself that already knows the truth.
Right.
And that humanity, and I'll just take this little side note here, I was told that humanity peaked spiritually over 2,500 years ago. We've already peaked spiritually. So it's
what
not
does that
all
mean?
About spirituality.
What is that? I'm not sure what you mean, peaked. What do you
mean?
Well,
over 2,500 years ago, because you have to look at the universe and even spirituality as part of a natural system, not a supernatural. It's metaphysics is natural, spirituality, spirit is natural, not supernatural. So we're all evolving, the universe is evolving and expanding, and so is the Oversoul, so is the Godhead expanding. There's nothing set. It's all expanding and in process of self-correction and self-order. This is in every atomic form. This is in everything that we know. We come from a universe that is self-correcting and self-organizing. It's only when you get these distortions of when things get too big, when kings get too big, when thieves get too big, when companies get too big that they can't fail. You get that term? Too big to fail? That they become cancerous to the system. But this system is so robust, and this planet has had everything the universe can throw at it, and we're still here, and we're still evolving very, very nicely. Now, when I say we peaked spiritually over 2,500 years ago, that's when the sum total of experience reached and opened up to what's called universal truth. And when you open the door to universal truth, there is no industrial model. There's no new and improved. There's no rust. There are universal truths throughout the entire universe, just like atomic order, that work perfectly. And I'll give you an example of what that might be. Over 2,500 years ago, these first thoughts appeared and began to be spoken about. And one of the greatest was, do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
You do that and you don't need Ten Commandments. So
right.
A self-realized, self-initiated person doesn't need a sign that says don't litter. You know litter is no good. You see, that's what I'm talking about. I'm going to go kiss the face of God and worship at the throne forever. Self-realization and our next step, the next step that is so amazing is that humanity is now going to step out of survival for the first time in our history because we're already technically there. The future is not about survival, and we have survived all the kings, the priests, and the thieves that have tried to distort, control power. And have you noticed in world history, the history of the world, that any time any kingdom, any system gets too large, that it controls too much of the system, that it attracts many, many enemies to be broken up and reassimilated?
Well, that happens eventually, but it took Rome many years to fall. The British Empire, is still large.
Correct, but look at the timing. Egypt controlled the world for the longest time in history, then Rome a little bit longer, and as time has gone on, as we have evolved, and we've got more educated people on the planet now than ever before in the history, as time has gone on, these giant systems or these systems have been able to control the world smaller and smaller times, including, America's time is over. Our empire is ending.
Although some people say there's a group of people that do control the world. I don't know if that's true or not, but there's a, secret society that is behind everything. Do you believe that, or is that just a modern myth?
Well, My message is one that I'm not trying to convince you or convert you. If you want to believe that, go ahead. There is always conspiracies going on. Nature, flowers, trees have conspiracies to control the light. These things are as natural as nature itself. I have my own conspiracy I'm actively working on.
Okay.
And my conspiracy is bring heaven to earth.
Well, I like
Everyone,
what you're saying. And I totally agree. If enough people focus on that divine connection and being in that light and bringing that light and self-awareness and self-initiation to the planet, we don't have to give energy to all those other darker conspiracies, whether they exist or not. And I don't give that energy. I like what you're saying. I like where you're coming from. And I think you have a great message. And it's something, you know, it's obvious, but everyone needs to hear it, that we are divine, clear, loving beings. And we're here to realize that truth. I mean, that's...
Absolutely. And the biggest evolutionary step we're ever going to make, we're in the process of making right now, once we get most of humanity out of survival, the spirit changes, because survival is something that compromises everyone's actions, from the richest man in the world to the poorest person in the world. Once we get past survival, and we're technically there, we can technically do it now, the future is not about economy and jobs and corporations. It's about something completely different, and we're evolving into that. You know,
what is that thing that it's about? I mean, I got a sense of it, but what can you name? What is that thing that we're evolving into?
Here's where it gets really, really beautiful, and that is, and I do this in some of the seminars that I get. The future is not about work for human beings. Our machines, our robots, our technologies are going to free us. Do you know, and just to make a metaphor, do you know what really freed the slaves when the only way you could be rich was to have a lot of slaves? Do you know what really freed the slaves?
Are you saying the cotton gin? Or no? Or the machine? The machinery, is that what freed the slaves, you're saying?
It wasn't all the do-gooders. It wasn't Abraham Lincoln. It was the industrial age where you could be rich without enslaving people. And the same thing is, the technologies of today will free us from being slaves, because we are slaves to the machine right now. We necessarily have had to come through this path. I was shown on the other side where I got a general picture of the future, because there is no exact picture, but there's a kind of a mass potential future, which is fantastically positive. I got to see that, you know, people even 400 years from now look back on us as the giants of history. Can you imagine that? Can you see? When I tell people that, they're stunned. I mean, they look back on us now as the giants of all of human history, and it's true,
because,
we are.
Because we took this step into freedom, is that what you're saying?
We did all the work, the heavy, heavy work of that will set up the freedom of mankind. Because spirituality alone will not free mankind. Spirituality alone will not save the planet. Because you get into that, whose religions? People start fighting over whose gods are more powerful than the other god. No, that's not going to save the world. The true nature of us is that our own human nature, our own Gaia nature, and see, that's the thing I learned. The most important lesson on the other side was to look at everything from the Gaia perspective, and the Gaia perspective is basically looking at the whole system. It's like when and this happened to me, but it's like when the astronauts finally got off going to the moon and got off the planet far enough, they photographed the whole Earth, and what did those astronauts say? It was mystical. When you see the whole Earth, this blue marble, when you see the whole Earth, you don't see governments, you don't see boundaries, you don't see skin colors, you don't see religions. You see an entire system that's more imaginable than people can get right now, the whole living system of which we are a part of. And so as I try to explain to people, looking at all of this, your life, the universe, everything, from the Gaia perspective is like this. Normally, we're looking at our life, the universe, and everything as if we're looking at a great painting 1 inch at a time. And part of that painting looks like heaven, and part of that painting looks like hell, and part of it you can't even understand. But if you step back with the full perspective, you see it's a magnificent masterpiece.
Thank you. And that's a great image for people to kind of just absorb, that the earth and our merging of our consciousness is what's going to awaken humanity to our true self. I mean, that we're here. I mean, I've always said we have to go beyond survival if we're going to survive, and that's what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely true. And so, we're technically there. We can technically do it now. It's totally, it's not only possible, it's inevitable.
I totally believe that, and I hold that. But is the vibration of the earth, I mean, we have the technology, we have all, but is something else happening as well? Is the vibrational frequency shifting to awaken more of our brain, more of our awareness?
Absolutely, and this is one of the points that I go through quite in detail in this multimedia presentation that I make, and that is that their consciousness has been evolving, and we have more consciousness on the planet than we ever have had in ever before. We have more wise people on this planet now than have ever existed before, and an example is, you name a problem, whether it be a desert lizard to a tree, a particular rare tree, to space exploration, there are tens of thousands of people working on that now. Name a problem. There's somebody working on it. This has never happened before. So we have the wisest people that have ever lived or living now, and of course you count into reincarnation. Many of those wise ones are with us now. They wouldn't miss this for anything. And the level of group consciousness is what's really evolving at a fantastic rate. Just think, you know, there was a book written in the 1800s in the Industrial Revolution called I, Pencil. And it was a pencil who had been a pencil was examining itself, and it was saying, how did I come to be? And there's no one human on earth that can make a pencil by themselves. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know. It takes all the creation to make that one pencil.
To invent the machinery, to mine it,
everything.
To make it,
yeah, I
and
mean,
all of that.
It's not just the pencil, but the little speck of dust that's floating in the air. It's the whole universe that takes.
So with more humans on the planet, we have more consciousness, more eyes to see, more ears to hear, more hearts to love. And the amazing thing is that our spiritual path is also a very sacred biological path. I've written something that you'll see in my seminar called Sacred Biology. And that is an amazing thing to understand. It's trippy. Is that if you're in a human body right now, you have been on this path from the very beginning. You've made the walk through every form, inorganic and organic, to this moment. And what's fascinating about human beings is that we are the youngest species on the planet, but we have the most ancient DNA. Our DNA is like Noah's Ark. It's like the book of life on this planet. And no other living beings on this planet, species, have this type of DNA. Because if you're human, you've been everything else. You have dolphin cells in you. You have spirulina in you. You know, the human body, they say, is made of maybe 10 trillion cells or so. But did you know that over 7 trillion of those cells are microbes?
Right.
There is a universe within you, and that universe has some of the life forms of the very first life forms on planet Earth are still alive in you and every other living thing on this planet.
So we're in the shift right now. I mean, you're going to talk about 2012. I saw the title, but it's 2012, December 21st, what the Mayans said was the end of their one calendar cycle, or is it an ongoing awakening, or is it happening at a moment, and it's happening?
Well, you know, the thing about ascension and evolution and all of this is that for every single thing to get to the same moment at the same time is not normal or natural. Not everybody gets hungry at the same time. Not everybody wants the same thing to eat. But generally speaking, most of the stuff you hear about the Mayans and the Mayan calendar, which I will go through, is really a cut-and-paste job, almost like they did with the Bible and prophecies. It's a cut-and-paste job, and we want to see through that, because even for the Mayans, who didn't invent that calendar, by the way, they inherited it from two other civilizations before them, it was only the beginning, because there is no end to this. It's only the beginning. It's always
But I'm just saying, is there a point where the shift to this higher level will actually ignite? But you're saying it's ongoing. It's not happening for everyone all at once.
Well,
is that
it's what happens is when these things happen, it depends and is quite natural for a large consciousness shift to happen. You know, there was a time in which if you bathed, you were considered to be a very suspicious person. Mm-hmm. Now, very few people on planet Earth today believe it's a bad thing to bathe. You see how consciousness shifts to mass potential?
Of course, but
and so with the near-deathers and with all this spiritual stuff going on, we're beginning to see that people have died and come back, tell us about it. People have seen the other side and report to us, and we're beginning to get over the fear of death, but the fear of death can really manipulate you, let me tell you. And we're getting past the fear of death. We're also at a point in which technically we can take care of everybody on planet Earth and not destroy the planet. So in this group consciousness, there is only one life on planet Earth. It is the great life. It's the whole system of which we are only a part of it. And I tell you, when I really think about this and remember it, to be human just completely humbles me. I mean, it's just such... Humans are the most graceful beings on this planet. We bring grace to all levels. And it just humbles me when I realize this and think about it occasionally. Just to be the human part of this incredible system, that in itself is a blessing beyond measure.
Did you see the movie Tree of Life? A lot of what you're saying reminds me of that movie.
No.
Have you heard about that?
I've only heard a review on the radio.
Oh, because a lot of what you're saying about the evolution of our cellular structures and our consciousness, I mean, it just is an interesting overview of a lot. You know, it's another reminder, someone else who tapped into the frequencies and the understanding that where you're coming from. So we're getting this message from many places. So, I mean, but how long do you see it? Will that shift take for where we are all beyond survival? Will it be 10 years? Will it be 20 years? I mean, I know it's already happened, but when will we all know it?
Well, you can't put an exact date on it. That's why most prophets are usually completely wrong. And the day they put a date on it, you can bet the farm and get rich that it's not going to happen. But It's a process that has no speed at all. It's beyond the speed of light. Up till now, it's taken a lot of hard work. Most of us have been slaves, and most of us have worked hard. And now we're getting into freedom that's never been known on planet Earth before, and taboos are down. The next level, and the next level is up to us individually to become self-initiated. And as that happens, and it's happening rapidly all over the planet, thanks to the internet and travel and all of these things that connect us, it's happening so fast now that I tell you, and we have to think of cosmic time. Especially Americans are so used to instant gratification. If I can't have it next Friday, I don't want it. You know, give me a break. This is happening so fast already. Things are changing so fast already that most of us can't even keep up with what's going on.
Right. So do you believe there are, I mean, of course, there are other civilizations on other planets, and are they part of the shift in consciousness that will be happening, or it doesn't matter at that point?
Well, I'm really mainly concerned with Earth, and that the universe is full of of life, although from what I've seen in my travels with the light, I can tell you that 99.9% of life in the universe is microbial. Mm-hmm. And to find a life form that, you know, there are life forms a million years ahead of us, there are life forms a million years behind us. To find a life form that's like us, close enough for us to communicate, is extremely rare in the universe. But I'm using cosmic numbers and astronomical numbers. So when I say to find civilizations that we can actually communicate with and be useful, relationship is extremely rare, but in cosmic terms, we're talking about maybe even 10 billion of them in our own galaxy. Mm-hmm. But see, that's an extremely low number, though.
There does seem to be people visiting, or species seem to be visiting the planet. Well, that's just probably separate from your specific teachings.
Yeah, that whole subject's well covered. I never get into that subject because it's so well covered by so many different types of people out there. I am concerned with the Earth human and the Earth transition. And I'm suspicious of both sides, the believers and the non-believers in extraterrestrial life. I'm suspicious of both of them because a lot of it doesn't make any sense at all. But on the other hand, I believe that human beings are the most adaptable beings imaginable. And I believe that if aliens landed from another planet, that within 2 weeks we'd have them in Coca-Cola commercials.
Right. Right, that's probably why. But getting back to you, you don't have any fears now, and nothing probably upsets you because you've already been, you know, you've already gone as far as you can go. I mean, what's your life like then, personally?
Well, it's not like that at all. A lot of people think that just because I had this near death experience, all my problems were solved. Not at all. We still deal with all the foibles of the world. You still have things you need to work on personally. Just in my life, just since my near death experience, I've been homeless almost twice.
Really?
I can tell you that having a key to the Akashic records and being able to go to the light at will as I do, that and $3 will buy me a cup of coffee.
Wow, that's shocking. I mean,
well, it's normal and it's humbling.
But you don't have fear. I mean, it may not be fun not having, but it seems like you wouldn't have any fear about any of that.
Well, I certainly don't want to be homeless and I don't want to suffer, you know, but I'm not afraid of death. And I've been up against some tough characters in my life since near-death experience with my inventions because, you know, I was given the gift of invention, and they're very powerful people that have been fighting over my inventions ever since. And I
we're almost out of time,
but
what kind of inventions did you...
Let me tell you.
We're almost out of time, but what kind of inventions did you create dealing with
I'm a very eclectic inventor. I've been tested. I can invent on command in clinical situations. I've invented everything from shoes to tools to advanced medical products that are all out and they're around. A lot of people don't know a lot about me because I never got that famous disease. That's the disease to be famous. I never got it.
Right.
I'm really quite the homebody, and I like my life, and I mean I love my life, and I like having a lot of time for my life, and so I was never interested in being a Bill Gates or a big movie star or anything like that. My life is full, but most people are unaware of all the things that I have done. Now in Connecticut, I will be giving a slideshow of all the stuff I've been doing. It may surprise people of all the things that I've done that are out and all around you.
No, I look forward to meeting you. Thank you, Mellon, for this amazing, enlightening interview. I think we'll do one for video when I see you, if that's okay, you know?
Well, that'd be great. And, you know, I just want to offer people hope. There's something much bigger than all this politics and economy going on. There's something really right about the world, and that's what we need to focus on. And we need to be self-initiated. We need to call these presidents and call these leaders, call them out. And that's what self-initiation is about. Is not accepting all the lies.
Yeah, no, I think that's happening. Are you still going to the light every time you want? Can you still do that at will?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And you're still doing it? Every day do you do it?
Yes, I do, and I do it for I do it in think tanks, and I do it for others on occasion, and I do it for research because I, my life since my near-death experience is that of a full-time researcher, and I'm blessed and love being a full-time researcher.
Wow. Well, thank you. And your website is
You can just go to Mellon, M-E-L-L-E-N hyphen Thomas.com, MellonThomas.com. And even if you spell it wrong, you'll get there.
Mellon Thomas. And Mellon Thomas will be in Connecticut August 26th, 27th, 28th of 2011, along with Bernie Siegel, Dr. Judith Kravitz, and Bashar is going to be doing a channeling at that event as well. And the website for all that is soul-wisdom.org. I would say get your tickets now. And you can also check my website for updates on that. That's newrealities.com. Thank you again, Mellon. That was very interesting for me.
Well, thank you, and blessings to everyone.
Yes, great work you're doing. I look forward to meeting you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. This is New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. And again, if you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check the website newrealities.com. Thank you.